You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hi, this is Leslie Frazier, and this is the NFL Players Second Acts Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Peanut Tillman, and with me, as always, the Deacon, Roman Harper.
Thank you. Thank
Welcome
you.
Man. I appreciate What's up?
That. I'm doing good, man. How are you doing today? I love the energy that you're bringing today. A lot of energy. I'm actually confused. I won't say our guest name yet, but he always calls me some kind of random name. And so now that he's just being normal, I appreciate it. So thank you for being normal out here in the L.A. studios, the NFL studios. This is a beautiful place.
Dude. Yes, it is.
Whoever built this was on top of it. I actually think that they have spent over $1 million in chairs alone in this building.
Chairs are nice. My back feels good. Lower lumbar.
There it is. All right. So, all right. Before we get in, all the way dive into it, here we go. So let's tell all of our listeners and the people that follow us on the podcast, continue to do that. Also, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. Give us a rating, a review, 5 stars, that is. And wherever you pick up your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcast or iHeartRadio app, wherever you do tune in, please continue to do that and bring somebody else with you. Peanut, who's our guest today?
All right. Today's guest was drafted in the second round by the Buffalo Bills in the 94 draft, played 5 seasons for 5 different teams as a DB, the best position on the field, and a kick returner. After playing in the NFL, he was a scout for a number of teams, and now he has an obscene amount of jobs, and we'll get into that. But I want to introduce y'all to Bucky Brooks. Welcome to the show.
My guys. Life comes... Life comes full circle, because I just remember in meeting rooms having to do reports and talk about you guys as a cross checker when you guys were in your respective schools and coming out and trying to make your way into the league. And now here I am. You guys became great NFL players, and now we're kind of sharing a mic today.
Go ahead. Can I know what my scouting
report was? Yeah, because green dot?
I want to know.
So, unfortunately, for both of you guys, you weren't in my area when you came out. Your draft year, what year was it,
Peanut? I'm 03.
So, 03. So, I was still working with the Carolina – not I was working with the Seattle Seahawks. And the guy who was in your area, John Peterson, boy, he loves some Peanut, man. Oh, my God. All he talked about was this guy, Peanut. Don't be this. He's going to be that. He's big. He's long. He played corny. He played safety. All these other things. Da-da-da-da-da. And so your year, Roman, was when?
2005-06. Yeah.
Okay, so
I got drafted in 06.
Okay, so we were
in Alabama, so
we had mutual friends, because you were with Bill Johnson, Pat Didek.
Yep.
Bill Johnson is one of my closest friends.
Oh, yeah, that's
so I knew, even before scouting you, I knew who you were, because Bill and I go way, way, way back to
that's
when I was
awesome.
Playing in Jacksonville or whatever.
That.
And so it's funny, because both you guys have similar traits in terms of it was always high IQ, known for the game, behind the scenes, the study habits were good. It was all about the preparation process or whatever. And so you had prototypical size for the corner, because at the time, any corner that was over 5'10" and a half was considered a big corner back then in the league.
Huge.
So everyone talked about that. At safety, it was about the game was changing, where we were losing some of the distinction between free and strong, and could you do both? And could you, in a quarter system, play down, but could you also play high? And so having all those things, and then because of my experience going from being a wide receiver to a DB, I always pay close attention to DBs. And like, you find yourself when you're scouting, you're not supposed to look at all the techniques and tools. Be like, oh, okay, could I play with these guys?
Right.
Because that always, to me, is the last question. Could I line up in the huddle? Would I want those guys to be in the huddle with me? And so I remember both you guys very, very well about
look at that.
In the huddle.
Well, here, I got a personal question. Mm. It's because, you know, I'm going to call you Bucky.
Yeah, that's it.
But how many people do you actually allow to call your real government name, though?
Oh, no one.
Nobody.
Like, well, like, I know you don't know me. If you call me by my government name, I know you don't know. And like,
right.
Like people going to be up here. Like, I'll tell it. Because my real name is William Eldridge Brooks Jr. So, but you guys know I'm from the South.
Yeah.
And so when you're South, everyone has a nickname because my cousins and them, William Eldridge, with different last names. And so everybody had a nickname. So I got cousins and all that or whatever. My dad is never going by his real name. He goes by Blake. I go by that. My son's name is Trey because he's the third, but that's what it is.
Oh, I'm familiar with it. Hey, I'm Peanut. That. My older brother, his name's Duck. I'm from my dad, Lil Donald. My mom, her name, Tiny. Like, we just come from a house of nicknames. So, hey, I feel you on that. Like, I get it. I gets it. Hey, I get the whole government thing, man. So, what I really want to know is, you are a very busy man. Mm. And what I mean by that is you have a couple of podcasts. You are an analyst for NFL Network. You host Move the Sticks podcast. You do some stuff for Fox. How many jobs do you? Oh, I even believe you're a coach.
Oh, yeah. High school.
So,
yeah,
a high school coach.
One, two, three, four.
Oh, we don't turn down anything.
Okay. So we don't turn down. Hey, I like it, though.
If they're paying, I'm playing.
Explain to the viewers how many jobs you have.
Like, it varies. So the main hub is, like, obviously NFL media is the main gig. I do radio on Fox. I contribute to some other platforms as a writer and those things. But, like, that's kind of the way of the new world. Like, when I originally entered the media world, 2007, it was about trying to find one spot and you did it. But now you've seen, like, you have to be able to do more to kind of piece it together. And exclusivity is kind of a thing of the past when it comes to being able. So now you want to be able to contribute and do a bunch of different things. And look, as vast as your imagination is, that's where your opportunities can be. And so for me, because I wasn't a decorated player, I knew I had to have something that would create opportunities for me. So one, as a scout, but two, as a writer, like taking the writing path to kind of get into the media world provided more opportunities. And so I always say the writing is the foundation, the TV and the podcast and radio. If you can write, you can do those other things because it all is kind of interwoven.
Were you always a really good writer or did you always just read a lot?
Nah, like you imagine. Okay, so like imagine when we go to college, right? You know, when you go to college and like they give you like the exams in the middle of training camp, right? Like where they at North Carolina, they did the placement exams in the middle of 2-a-days. So like, hey, this is your English, this is your that. So I was in like bad English because I was like just trying to get through.
The beginner English.
Yes. And so it was funny that I came to write because it wasn't something that I would say I really focused on coming up. But then what happens is I had a great appreciation for people who can express with the power of the pen.
Mm-hmm.
And then because one of the most vulnerable things you do, like all of us, like as players, we kind of have these journals that we keep, right?
Yeah.
So imagine if I grabbed your journal from the middle of your New Orleans Saints days.
Yeah.
When you may be like struggling in camp and you're like, I don't know what is going. Yeah. So to me, it's like the most personal, intimate thing that you can share is letting someone kind of see your words on the page. And so I just fell in love with that process and being able to think a little differently. And so it kind of worked out.
That is awesome. I didn't think, like, the whole journey and using the power of the pen is amazing to hear, like, a former football player talk about it and use those skills, especially, not trying to knock it, Chapel Hill's a highly regarded institution as far as education is.
One of the best public schools you ever can
find. Yes, it is. I hear about it all the time.
He's going to talk about Alabama.
I mean, if we want to talk about sports, it's not even close. But as far as education, that's all you hear about is Chapel Hill.
We talk about football. We talk about sports. Now you got to come see us. Because we got all of that stuff.
Right. You do.
Football is a little behind. In fact, my senior year, we lost to Alabama in the bowl game because that was Sherman Williams.
Oh, yeah. Sherman Shade.
Yeah. Sam Shade and all those guys.
Yeah.
We played him in the Gator Bowl.
Throwback. All right. So
big
all these jobs, all these things. So when do you find time to sleep? Like what is a typical week for Bucky Brooks?
It all kind of works together.
Or you don't sleep because I'm a guy, I can do all right with like four or five.
I can do all right with a little bit. Yeah. But it all works together. So during the season, it's not as heavy for me when it comes to NFL Network and TV stuff. Like podcast three times a week. I may occasionally pop on a show like Total Access or something like that. But primarily, it's just podcasting and then writing. I'll write a couple times a week. That's when high school football is heavy in. Head coach of a school there. So we practice before school. So we practice at 6 a.m. We go from like 6 to 7:20. We on that NFL quick practice in and out.
Fast Friday.
But we do Fast Friday every day.
Yeah.
And we get in and out. And then I go about my day. Like the podcast will be whatever. And some days are heavy with stuff and that. But when it gets to the spring, high school football is done. But then that's when it's the draft and focusing on that path to the draft.
Yeah.
Like the main show that I'm on, that comes on. And so it just kind of, it fluctuates, but it's always busy, but busy in a different
way. Are you studying college players throughout the season? Like, how does that process go? And when are you starting to really dive into that? Because that's where your bread is. I mean,
Because that's the background. So the background is, like, I was a college scout, so I would go and look at college players, and then we'd rank them and draft them and evaluate them, put them on the board for the draft and those things. For me, you're always paying attention to the college game. Mm-hmm. Like, I do sideline work for the Jacksonville Jaguars radio. And so when I'm on the road on a Saturday night, like, you pop in TV, you see what's going on, but you also have your tape available. And then as it gets closer to the end of the season, when you begin to get the names, you begin to hear from your scouting buddies who are in the league, hey, here are the names that you need to watch. Mm. And then you begin to like kind of really do a deep dive into these are the guys that we really need to know. And you see, because you guys do it in the media world, like you kind of play the hits. Like you're talking about the top guys. Every now and then on TV, you'll get into an obscure, hey, this is a late round little gem nugget. But most of the time, we're talking about the top guys. And so sometimes at night, you can TV scout, but then you follow it up with real film work, film scouting.
Okay. Now, being as busy as you are and all the jobs that you have, I know when you are a coach, you have this responsibility to teach young men about life, the game itself, but you teach them about life. You teach them about hard work, teamwork, how to grind, how to work together, how to overcome obstacles, failures, and whatnot. What's really been the most gratifying job for you out of all the ones that we just mentioned?
Well, all of them are gratifying in a different way, but I would say high school, because you guys know, like, there's always been a coach that's somewhere along the line that touched you in a different way.
For sure,
either change your path or he gave you the confidence that, you can do this.
Yep.
And so for me, high school gives me the opportunity to do that. I coach at a public school up in the northern part of L.A., and it's just great to like see all these dudes, right? Because like, I don't care what anyone says, like there's nothing that is like playing. There's no replicating, like running through the tunnel, feeling all that gladiator mentality. The only thing to me that's close to that is coaching. And I can't do it anymore, but I can live through watching them do. So if we're talking about, we're a team to play a lot of man-to-man, but we're like, hey, man, look, if they get in this bunch, we're going to banjo it. And he's going to throw it, and it just don't blow the layup. Yeah. And when they do it, you come out of your shoes just like you would as a player if we're teammates and you get a pick six and we meet in the end zone. So to me, those things are great. And, when they do great things and you tell them, like, that's great that you're doing all your stuff on the field, but now let's take care of this stuff off the field, because how you do anything is how you do everything. And you give them those little things that coaches have poured into you, and then you see them take it. And then I think the thing, and it happens with our kids, whatever, when you hear them say stuff that you said to them, to their teammates, like little guys that come in like, nah, man, you got to take care of the details and all that other stuff. That's when you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. That part to me it's fun, like, watching them grow. And I've been on the camp circuit for a long time, like, working with Nike camps and all that, and seeing Derwin James and Jamal Adams and all these guys come through and watching them when they're teenagers.
Yeah.
And now I see them as
pros.
Right. But they see you and they're like, Coach Bucky. And you're like, so to me, it's just like paying it forward. And so the game is such a great game. That's one of the things. You can take all the things that you learn from playing in between the lines on the grass and you give it to young people and then they can take it and use it in a bunch of different ways.
You know, I think it's so interesting you say that because my dad was a high school coach and he coached me my first couple years in high school. And I used to ask him like, Dad, why do you coach? Like, these kids can't do this. You're yelling all, like, you're up here for all these hours. Like, why? And it was the same example that you just gave. You're like, it's something to be said when you have a guy walk in here as a freshman, can barely tie his shoes, put his pads on backwards, and you look up 2 or 3 years later and he's playing. Like, I have shaped this kid into a player.
Right.
And I can trust him to, like, not mess it up. He's going to be able to tackle somebody. And you get excited for these things. And so that's the real joy of coaching high school football that I don't think anybody really understands until you do it.
Yeah, so that to me, that was always the level I always wanted to be at.
Right.
I didn't have aspirations to coach like a higher level because in high school, most high schools, unless you're at a private high school, I mean, you coach up who shows up.
Mm-hmm. True.
And so like when they come through the door, you're like, ooh, we don't have a quarterback. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to jump in this single wing thing and try and figure it out or whatever it is. Like, and so, oh man, they really don't understand how to play zone. So you know what we're going to do? Hey man, that's your man. That cat is your cat. Wherever he goes,
you go.
Like, and so you like, to me, that's the beauty of high school ball. Like, you never know what it's going to look like, and then you try and figure out, all right, guys, like, this is what we got. We have one defensive end, and, you know, so to me, that's the beauty of high school, and that's why I have so much respect for high school.
And also, to attest to that, your past year, you guys went to the championship. Your first two completions all year long, we're in the championship game. You guys rushed for 5,400 yards and 70 touchdowns and didn't throw the ball all year long. So the single wing, which nobody can defend, obviously.
No, clearly they can't.
I think that's a benefit to you, though, and a testament that you're such like, you know what, we're going to do whatever works.
It is. So,
and you're not just stuck in your ways because you hadn't been coaching for 35 years.
No, so here's what's funny, and it goes back to when I was working with the Carolina Panthers. You can look this up. It's really funny. So we had to play against the Atlanta Falcons.
Uh-huh.
Starting quarterback Jake Delhomme is out. Chris Winkie is the quarterback.
Mm.
I don't know if John Fox had a lot of confidence in Chris Winkie. So we lined up with D'Angelo Williams and Deshaun Foster and played the Wildcat the entire game. They threw six passes. I think we threw six passes and won. Both the news went over. So then I was like, oh, well, you know what? Like, sometimes you just, whatever you do whatever you got to do and get out of it. But those are the things that you do. And in high school, like, you have to, like, just take what you're given and kind of figure out a way to make it work.
I love that.
I do, too.
I
don't think we had that in Texas. We always had some good talent coming through them doors at Copper's Cove.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up, picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all. But here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay. So you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah. Like, check out these hair plugs. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping your head. Hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, like John Cena got him. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot and now he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but.
All right. So what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
So tell me, all right, so what's the transition like being from, all right, you were in the scouting world, now you're on the opposite side of it, covering it as an analyst. How have the relationships of the people that you worked with, has that changed? Or has it been kind of remained the same? Or do they respect you the same? Like, because you got to tell it honestly. Or you wouldn't keep the job that you had. You're honest.
Well, like you guys know, because I've seen both of you guys on TV. So y'all know, like, when you come off the set and all of a sudden your phone is buzzing. Because when you put, like, man, what you? Like, yeah. Dude, like, come on now. You know I got to play TV. So I got to sell it. And I got to sell it in a major way. But it's actually been great, because what happens is your boys, your guys who are, like, you're really, like, that you're down with. Mm-hmm. They'll call you. They'll give you the information.
Yeah, that's like, very true.
Here's what's going
very
on. True. This and that. Because they want you to look good. And they beam when they see you on TV. Because they're like, hey, man, look at you. All up here fancy and all that. But they dig it. They actually are prideful when they see you do your thing. Because you know what the locker room is like. Like,
oh, yeah.
Really, at its core, we really care about it. Even though the pros are kind of weird, because, like, we're all kind of independent contractors. When you're on great teams, you really still have that same camaraderie from
no doubt.
Little League and high school or whatever. Where, like, man, it's about your boy getting off, and we do well as a group. Everyone gets off. So for me, the relationships have been the same. And what I always try to do is, if I do have to criticize, I always try and make it where it's not personal. Like,
right.
here's what we're talking about. We're talking about a decision that was made. We're talking about a player that was picked and those things. And you try to, like, have a critical eye, like, hey, well, maybe they're thinking this and those things. And for me, it is work, because most of the guys, even if they don't agree with, like, my opinion, they can be like, oh, okay, I get that. It's just when, if you go sideways, and I've never been like a hot take artist.
Right.
But if you go sideways where you're trying to embellish it and blow it up, that's when you're like, come on, man, what are we doing?
Yeah.
But most of the time people can respect it and they're like, oh, okay, I get that.
Now, when you got out, you got right into the scouting. Now, why do you do scouting versus coaching?
Well, I did. It's funny because I bounced around so much as a player that I didn't want to kind of have that life as a coach. Because we've seen,
that's very
we've seen
true.
It. We've all been coached by guys that, man, they got different logos on every year.
Well, they say if you're a coach, it's not about, like, if, it's when you're going to get fired.
Right. So imagine, like, I mean, we all have kids. Like, like, imagine you don't want to take your kids, like, every 2 years bounce them around or whatever. So for me, I was like, all right, like, the scouting thing at the time was supposed to be the more stable environment of that. So you're still close to the game in a different way than coaching. Now, there's still nothing like coaching than playing are, like, the two things. Because you get, look, there's a scoreboard.
Right.
When you're scouting, you don't have the same scoreboard. Like, you can talk about the draft, but you don't see it until, like, 2-3 years. And so the hard thing for me as a scout was you didn't have a direct impact on the game each Sunday. So you're watching the game, but it's not like a decision that you made as a coach either wins or loses, or as a player, how you played. As a scout, you're sitting back and you're thinking about the long view. And so I missed that part of
the competition,
which is why when I had an opportunity and I moved over to media, I was like, well, I got to coach. Now I got to get that. I got to scratch that itch. Mm-hmm. And coaching high school did that. But, like, that part of it. But for me, I was still trying to squeeze out one more year, right?
Yeah.
I was trying to squeeze out, like, man, if I could just get one. And so I called one of my boys who was working with the Philadelphia Eagles, and he was like, yeah, nah, I ain't got nothing for you as a player, but there may be a job that opens up as a scout. So I was prepping to get ready for an interview there, called another one of my guys, and he had just got a gig in Seattle. He's like, why don't you come up here and interview? I went up there and interviewed and never left, you know?
Okay.
So that's how I played out. But the same thing, those relationships, and as a player, because I'm sure you guys did it as players, you let people know what you would like that transition to be for you after football is done. Because I'm sure coaches or people around came, hey, man, what do you want to do when football is over?
Yeah.
Hey, man, I want to coach. I want to do this. I want to scout. And so I let people know what my intentions were, and then it just so happened that I got opportunity.
So you got – go ahead.
No, no, I guess
– I'm like, something just hit my brain. I got to –
I guess my
question.
Won't
forget, I'll write it down.
Another question that I have is, so Chris Ballard was my scout.
Yeah.
And I brag on Chris Ballard every time because we talk, we're good friends. And he was like, man, I'll fault Jerry Angelo tooth and nail to take you second round. I know you didn't have the name, but I was like, I'm telling you, Charles Tillman, he's going to be the guy, blah, 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 blah. Has there been a player that you scouted in college that you were just like, nope, this is the guy. He can be X, Y, and Z. He will be a great player. Is there a guy in your – when you were scouting?
I think we all have guys that we love. Sometimes you're not in a position to take the player that you want for that team, but there are certain guys that you, like, gravitate towards. So I remember watching Steve Smith, who works with us here, but I remember watching him at Utah, and I remember watching him in the All-Star game circuit that guys do, like, after their senior year. Like, this dude was dominant at the hula ball. He was killing it. You sweat, like, so you're just like, man, this dude is like a dude. But he wasn't the prototypical size at the time, because, like, look, he's 5'9". He may list 5'10", but he was 5'9".
He's 5'9". He admits it now. He admits it now. Hopefully, he's 5'9".
Like, he was 5'9", and he was a returner. And so sometimes that can be a hard sell to say that, hey, man, this dude is a returner. But, like, he can be
a wide out, too.
So watching him, and then when I left Seattle to go there and watch him grow from being a Pro Bowl kick returner as a rookie to then being a guy that won the Triple Crown and become a multiple-time Pro Bowl player and wide receiver, those are the things that you're like, oh, okay, this is cool. Like, it's great to watch him progress. No one could predict that he would be what he became, a Hall of Fame caliber wideout. But to see him go from that and to be able to, like, yeah, I thought he could do some of that. I didn't think he could do all of that. That stuff is kind of cool.
Peanut, now I literally wrote just about that same question down that you just asked him. I want to know from the other side, was like, early on in your scouting career, did you ever, like, were you almost overconfident in some things, knowing that you had just come from playing? Were you overconfident with, like, man, I know this, and all of a sudden I was wrong, and I was like, man, maybe I need to go back to the drawing board on some of my thought processes about it.
So it's funny, because what happens is, as a player, and you'll see this, like, as you're around teams and those things, because I know you guys are around teams, sometimes there are not a lot of former players in the scouting department. And there can be a different rub, because sometimes as players, we may fall into these stereotypes, right?
Right.
Players are coddled. Players, I don't know if they can do the grind. I don't know if they get on it.
Yep.
This and that. Even though I always felt like, well, being a player, like, that gives me a leg up, because I kind of know what that thing is. And I felt like I would give prospects more grace just because I knew how hard the game is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, man. That's a hard play, coach. Like, that's hard.
You acting like
that's
it's normal.
Down. Yeah. That's a hard play. They coming down the screen. My man ain't got a reroute on number one. I'm on the hash.
Two-way go.
Two's coming right at me. What am I doing? They fit it in the honey hole, and you're mad at me because I can't get over there. Like, being able to understand that part of it. Yeah, and I think what happens is, because you come off the field, you may feel like you know it. And you should always feel good about it, but you also have to put the study behind that stuff. But I think the advantage that you have, we all play with great players.
Right.
So, for instance, I think in my past, I'm now up to, like, maybe 17 Hall of Fame teammates, right? So when I look at players, I begin to compare them to the players that I play with. So, for instance, I play with Bruce Smith, Derek Thomas, Reggie White. So when I'm evaluating pass rushers and people are talking about, hey, man, this guy's, I'm like, hey, man, these three dudes here, like, the top of the list when it comes to sacks. So I'm looking at Derek Thomas's get off compared to his. I'm thinking about Reggie White's ability to turn speed into power. I'm looking at Bruce Smith, his savvy and his overall dominance. Do I feel that? You know, do I see that in these players? And so I played with Charles Woodson when he was a rookie in Oakland. And so you begin to take all those things, all your experiences, and you begin to compare and contrast what the greats look like compared to somebody that you're evaluating. So I think, to me, it gave me a leg up.
So what have you learned in the game as far as, you know, you talked about all these players that you've played with, some good coaches that you played for. What's been one of the best lessons that you've learned with all of the players and coaches?
So I think from every coach that you play with, you learn different things. So every coach that I play with is either in the Hall of Fame or a Super Bowl champion. And the one exception is Marty Schottenheimer, who won 200 games. So Marv Levy's in the Hall of Fame. Mike Holmgren will be or should be. Mike Holmgren, Tom Coughlin, John Gruden. So all these guys learn great things. And so what I learned is they all went about their business in different ways. But they all kind of came back to the same thing. Man, it's all about the preparation. And it's about, ultimately, do you perform when the lights come on? Like, we can talk about all of it, but at the end of the day, you got to prepare. But when the lights come on, you got to show up. And that's just what it is. And it's the same thing when it comes to, like, doing TV, when in writing or whatever. How much you pour into the preparation process will give you the best opportunity to perform at a high level.
Yeah, and so, but it only gives you opportunity.
Yeah, you still got to make the play. You
still got to go out there and do it.
You still got to make the play. And so, to me, that's what it is. And that's what you try and tell young people. Hey, man, do all the work and do it. But I always feel like the one thing, if I could go back as a player, I might have been scared to pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. And so what I would always encourage people, man, take the shot. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. There are times where, yeah. And I go back and I always say this, like, we were playing the San Francisco 49ers in a preseason game, but I studied the tape. And every time Jerry Rice lined up at the top of the numbers when the ball was there, it was 100% a speed out. And so we get there and I'm like, man, there's the tail. He's right there. The ball's right there.
Like, it's like all
like, it's just frisky. Like, but then you like, do I go?
It's Jerry Rice,
right?
It's
do I go? Rice. So then you don't go, but you like that's the play. But then I played with guys because in college, Dre Bly came right behind me.
Yeah, Dre jumped Bly, everything.
He's going like if he looks everything. Over there, he's going. And I was like, I was like, dog, what? I'm gone. And so
no safety help.
It doesn't matter. But that was Dre.
That's Dre. And so that is the thing. And so I tell people, man, if you do all that and you trust it, you go with it.
Go with it.
And as a coach, I always said, I want to give you the freedom to do it. So I'm not going to jump you. Like, that's why we talk about having a mentor and having that right coach. Because the right coach will tell you.
Read your instincts. Yeah. Trust your keys.
Yeah. Trust your keys. And then because you're safe and you're a corner, we know the inner game is that I'm going to look at, hey,
He gone.
I'm gone. So, hey.
But that's
the thing where in the fraternity, you know that that's how we play. When someone gets a play, it's because like, hey, man, I'm cover me. I'm going.
Give me a little bit of extra help.
That's the communication all the time.
I feel like you did that with Jano
the whole time.
2015.
Because I was with Jano on that side.
Jumped everything.
All the time. We changed our whole defense. We went from a straight quarters to now the corners are allowed to jump anything to the flat.
I didn't know that.
We're over the top all the time. They were like,
we're playing read palms without even being read palms.
We're doing palms the whole back half of the season because Jano knows just like he going.
And so listening, the palm technique is when the two goes out and the corner just jumps.
Yeah. So to anything out to the flat by the second receiver on that side, the corner's
going to jump it.
And now the safety has to go over the top. So I'm covering number two until he goes out. Now I'm trying to bust over before there's a big honey hole. So yes, that was it. All right. Out of all those coaches, though, you mentioned them. Hall of Fame potential for all of them. If not now, they will be. Which one's the hardest to play for?
Okay, because I apologized to him after I played for him. So Tom Coughlin.
Yeah.
So Tom Coughlin.
You apologize.
I apologize.
Because Tom Coughlin was tough.
He was tough.
So
old school.
So when I go to Jacksonville, so you got to understand, I go from playing with the Green Bay Packers. We had come off of a Super Bowl appearance, and they were going right back. To now I go to Jacksonville, who's like in their second year as an expansion franchise. In Green Bay, like, they're winning. He comes from San Francisco, so everything, not only is first class, but it's like vet central, meaning like, now I'm a young player, but it's, hey, we ain't putting them pads on.
Slow down.
We're slow down. Oh, we ain't dressing up going on the road. Like, hey, we just going in to play, do our thing. Jacksonville, you walk in the door. Hey, man, it's concentration line. We go on the thing. You got to button everything up. When I mean button up, when you go walk out the door to go to the practice field, when you're on the practice field, your helmet had to be buttoned up at all times. Mm. Your socks had to be up. Everybody had to have on the same shorts. We're doing this. He's looking. If you got those little ankle socks, he's like, those aren't issued. Fine. You go on the road. We're in the hotel. So we're in the hotel, like, oh, look, okay, we'll be suited and booted on the plane.
I can relax.
We got sweat. Oh, if you're out the hotel room, you got to have on khakis and hard bottom shoes and a collared shirt. I'm sitting there, I'm like, what are we doing? Like,
and what year is this for you?
This is year 3 or 4.
Okay.
But I'm sitting there like, what are we doing? And when I first got it, we getting drummed. I'm like, we doing
this. We're not even winning. This is not even equating to win.
So we do. We go to the playoffs or whatever. So years later, I finished and I started coaching high school. And so the high school I went to, all these dudes would come out for workouts and they got on different colors. You got on green. The school colors are blue and gold. You got on green. You got on red.
Didn't look like a team.
No! Don't look like a team. So then I see Coughlin at the combine. I said, Coach, I got it now. I get it. I get why you did all that, because it was driving me crazy. But he was the one that was the hardest to play for, because he had all these rules. And I was like, oh, these rules make sense.
Yeah.
But he was a great coach, and he figured it out for real when he got to New York, because all those things, you got people there that swear by him. They swear by him in the tough love.
Yeah.
And all that other stuff. For me, I was a little immature. I couldn't figure it all the way out until later. I had a greater appreciation for a dot the I's, cross the T's. This is how we do all this stuff, standard across the board.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine that actually had him at Boston College when he was in college. He was like, dude, the dude was tough. Like, got to be there 5 minutes early. Like, it was like,
we do that.
He was like, my family had an accident. He was like, Coach, I don't know if I might be a little bit late. He was like, late, like, won't be here. It's like, no excuses. And so it just kind of, some people don't ever change. And, you know, and he's actually thankful for him now.
Yeah.
Like, because, some of the things.
So the funny thing is, you're alive. Yeah, the high school, they know. 5 minutes or hey,
at 11, it really started at 10:55.
So my thing was always that, Coach, well, if you want the meeting to start at 6:55, just tell me 6:55.
That's
Don't
it.
Tell me 7 o'clock, but you want me at 6:55. Like, just tell me the time. And I get the same complaints from the kids. I'm like, no, we start at 5:55. Like, you know
yeah.
what it is.
Yeah. So you've had successful, you know, media. You killing it right now, the scouting.
His team's killing it too. Went to the championship
high
last year.
Killing it. With the offense, Mount Rushmore, who would you put on that personal Mount Rushmore of mentors, coaches, great teammates, the Lord, mom, dad? Just, I mean, it's totally
Mount Rushmore.
Okay, yeah.
So first person on Mount Rushmore would be my dad.
Yeah.
So my dad is a retired firefighter, but he also was a coach. He coached Dexter Lawrence in high school. He was his D-line coach. They won, I think, 45 games in a row after Dex, but they won a state title. So I get him on – he's on my head every day about coaching. What are y'all doing? How you doing? Or whatever. So he goes –
So coaches in your blood.
Yeah, so he goes there. Mac Brown, my college coach, goes there because from Coach Brown, I learned the art of how you treat people. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want people to play at a first-class level, you got to treat them like first class.
Hands off to Mac Brown. Amazing human being. I mean, this dude could sell water in the middle of the ocean.
Unbelievable.
This dude,
unbelievable.
Awesome.
Unbelievable communicator.
Yes.
Like, Peanut, if he met you, he would meet you 5 years down from there. He would know first conversation would be
like. Yeah, he's that good.
And it's a gift that he has. So he was always that. I would say from a player, the guy who helped me the most, James Hasty, was an all-pro corner
in Kansas City
when I was there. And so when I got there, I'm still learning how to play corner. And what he did for me was he held me to a higher standard than I had ever been held to by a player. Because in Kansas City, under Martin Schottenheimer, it was a players-driven team. Mm. And so if you two guys in the secondary, if I'm the dime and I come in there and y'all don't really like how I get down, y'all would send me out. And the coaches would respond. So that's how that was. So Hasty said, nah, here's what you're going to do. You can come here on Tuesday at 8 o'clock. I'm going to come in at 9 o'clock. By 9 o'clock, you're going to have a report written on the number one receiver that we're playing. But what he did is he was teaching me how to prep and get ready to play. And so James Hasty would be there. And then I would say, like, the last guy, like, in terms of, like, a personal mentor would be Charles Davis. Charles Davis, for me, in broadcasting, has been everything.
He's so good.
In terms of learning how to prepare, learning how to do basic mechanics of like TV. Hey, when do you look at the camera? When don't you look at the camera? When do you engage and all that? Call him about anything when it comes to the business.
Yeah.
Because he is like water. Oh, he can do anything. He can call golf. He can call baseball. He can call football. Like, he's your lifeline. If you're on a trivia show and you need something, who knows random facts, CD has always been that guy.
You know he's good. He was on Madden.
That's my guy. Yeah, so CD's my guy. Yeah.
Well, hey, Buggy, we appreciate you coming down. We got like 1,000 more questions, but you got 72 jobs, and we know you busy, man. Hey, I just
gotta go to work, man.
Gotta go to work, man.
Come on, man. You know how it is. I appreciate you guys.
Appreciate you.
Bring me up. It's been great.
Thanks, man. We appreciate it, man. Thank you so much, man. All of our followers and listeners out there, man, continue to do that, man. We'll continue to bring you great guests like my man Bucky Brooks right here. And thank you so much. Give us a rating, a review, wherever you pick up your podcast at, whether it's Apple Podcast or iHeartRadio. Please give us a listen. tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. Peanut, tell them what we doing, baby. We out of here.
Hey, I'm Peanut. That's Rome. That's Bucky. This is the NFL Players Second Acts podcast from the LA studios, and we out.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.